Good afternoon. You're listening to Curated, a weekly roundup of the who's who and the what's what in the arts and culture scene here in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio's arts and culture reporter. Each week, we bring you conversations and stories about notable happenings in our little slice of the world. Today on Curated, we hear from the band Analog Sun.
You know, I mean, it's truly incredible, and Stevie Wonder certainly sits at the top of that pyramid of people that we really look up to.
Two veterans walk across the country in a recent documentary film.
When you get out of the military, you're active duty, you're really kind of isolated from all those people that you served with because they're from all over the country. So when I separated from the military, I went back to Wisconsin.
And we talked to the people behind Shakespeare in the Park.
Still, the scope and breadth of his plays just lend itself, especially to a beautiful landscape, which I think we've created in the Greena Plaza.
All of that, plus our Song of the Week, and as always, The Week in the Arts, a quick rundown of the top things to see, hear, and experience this week in the Valley. That's all coming up on Curated from Aspen Public Radio News. Denver band Analog Sun will make their first Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day appearance this weekend. They're opening for one of their idols, Stevie Wonder. And I spoke with one of the group's founding members, Jordan Linnett, last week about their music and this opportunity.
If you could describe Analog Sun, how would you describe it to someone who's never heard it before?
Stylistically.
Yeah. And like as sort of like an ethos or like a mission.
This project, you know, kind of started by accident. Me and him have been playing in a few other groups together, and we'd been wanting to put out a, you know, more funk soul oriented record. And, you know, we got together and recorded a few tracks with our buddy Joe Tatton from the New Master Sounds. They're an English band. And the, you know, the couple tracks we recorded just came out so good. We knew that this was the kind of project that we had in our hearts kind of wanted to pursue for a long, long time. You know, so pretty much immediately after those first couple tracks, we kind of went into full-time mode of really pursuing this project. So I guess, you know, it's really a passion project.
And has funk always been kind of your passion, your favorite?
Yeah, absolutely. We've always both had a really deep love for funk music. You know, and I think, we've always had very eclectic tastes. You know, I've always been a lot into rock and roll and funk and jazz. And, you know, Josh has been very involved in, you know, like the hip hop world and, you know, just some kind of other aspects. And I think that you can really see that all in our records. You know, there's definite aspects of jazz in our music, funk and soul and hip hop, you know, so I think it's really a reflection of all of our favorite styles.
You know, as a funk band, you've had the opportunity to open for Maceo Parker, who is an incredible, very well-known saxophone player. And I wanted to know, having the opportunity to open for Stevie Wonder, what that's like for you.
Incredible. in one word. You know, I mean, it's been a truly humbling journey to over the years to get to meet and play for, you know, people that we've been looking up to, you know, since we were, you know, kids, you know, 10 years old. You know, getting to play with Maceo Parker, it just kept going through my head, you know, this guy, you know, was making tons of records and hanging out with James Brown all the time. You know, like one of our biggest icons in music. And, you know, I mean, it's truly incredible. And Stevie Wonder certainly sits at the top of that pyramid of people that we really look up to. And, you know, if you would have told me 20 years ago that I'd be playing before Stevie Wonder, I probably wouldn't have believed you.
Do you remember getting that call asking if you wanted to do the show?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and my answer was without a doubt, 100%, yes. And then when I got off the phone, I think I probably, you know, yelled out loud. But I mean, Stevie Wonder, you know, is just, you know, one of our musical idols, and you know, it's just a true blessing, true pleasure to, you know, be able to play before him. And I will be in the front row watching his set, super excited, that's for sure.
Now, as a Colorado band, too, I want to know what it's like for you playing a Colorado festival. You're playing at Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day Experience.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think that... I think Colorado has some of the best, most attentive music fans in the country. I feel like people in Denver are more likely to go out to see, you know, a live performance rather than, you know, go, you know, rather than just pay for cables and like go to a movie on a Saturday night. And playing for the home crowd is just always incredible. You know, it's always great to see some friendly faces in the audience. And, you know, I think Colorado is the best music fans in the country.
And talking about your name, Analog Son, you're also big fans of analog recording, and I want to know why that is.
Well, the you know, and this is funny. This is almost a better question for Josh. you know, so basically, for quite a while now, Josh has operated a recording studio for maybe the last decade. And it's with analog recording, like say recording to a tape machine versus recording to, you know, a laptop with a few digital preamps, the analog gear has a much warmer, nicer sort of vibe to it. Although the band name also is you know, kind of deals with like that of like, you know, nice, warm, vintage analog, you know, organic instruments, you know, so like you know, a clavinet or a B3 organ or, you know, like we play a lot of vintage guitars and amps, you know, and just kind of all that really speaks to us, you know, and we live in a day and age where a lot of music is made, say, on a laptop with a virtual instrument, you know, and we just, you know, especially with the vibe of this project, really enjoy that analog vibe.
Do you think if you didn't have access to that equipment maybe, and you did make your records on a laptop, for example, that it would feel the same or it would feel the same for you?
Well, it's interesting you say that. My day job is I make electronic pop tracks.
Huh.
You know, so, you know, I make tracks kind of the opposite way. You know, I do it mostly on a laptop by programming drum beats, programming synthesizers, you know, so I'm very immersed in that world as well. And I think that there's a time and place for both. So, you know, but it's especially for this style of, you know, for the Analog Son style of music, it makes sense. And we really enjoy that aspect.
Playing at a festival like this, is this one of the biggest shows you've ever played?
You know, we've been fortunate enough to play, you know, some pretty big shows in the past. But you know, this is definitely, I mean, I've never actually been to this festival, so I'm just incredibly excited. You know, Josh and I've gotten to play at Red Rocks before for, you know, 10,000 people, and you know, it's just a really magical experience. So yeah, I mean, I imagine this will be one of the biggest shows we're playing, and you know, we've been working on a really, really great set, and couldn't be more excited.
All right, Jordan Linnett of the band Analog Son. They're playing at the Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day Experience this weekend. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having us, and we can't wait to come and funk out for Aspen. We'll be right back.
Last week, Mountain Summit Mountain Film came to Aspen's Wheeler Opera House. One film, Almost Sunrise, tells the story of two veterans, Tom Voss and Anthony Anderson, who decide to walk across the country and to help them cope with their mental health issues following tours of duty in Iraq. I profiled Voss ahead of the film's screening. When Tom Voss and Anthony Anderson returned from their tours of duty in Iraq, they came back as changed men.
When you get out of the military, you're active duty, you're really kind of isolated from all those people that you served with because they're from all over the country. So when I separated from the military, I went back to Wisconsin.
Voss was in his early 20s when he returned home. He was having a hard time dealing with the death of his commander in Iraq. And he was asking himself really difficult questions. Why wasn't it me who died? What could I have done differently? He began contemplating suicide.
I find myself off in that deployment world, you know, rethinking these situations. It's kind of like a reel that just keeps going and you just kind of like go off in that world constantly.
Voss was having trouble connecting with people, so he made a huge decision.
It was just kind of one of those times where you're like, something has to change, you know, and the only way that it's going to change is if I take initiative and do something, and it just kind of popped in my head.
Voss was going to walk across the country from Milwaukee to Los Angeles. Anderson heard about the journey and joined Voss. Their trip is documented in the film Almost Sunrise.
So I'd like to dedicate this to all those who can't be here and who are taken too soon from us. And if we can just give them a moment of silence.
So they set off on the five-month journey across the Great Plains, the Rocky Mountains, and through the desert Southwest.
You know, we set a goal to walk 20 miles every day. And when you're doing that and you have, you know, a 60, 65-pound ruck on your back, it's, you know, it's hard to train for that and to prepare your body for that. So, you know, we had some days where we would just walk maybe three city blocks and we'd be like, we can't, my body like just can't do it.
And it was all to help them get over the mental health issues they were dealing with. Voss turned to drinking when he returned from war. And even after he and Anderson finished their walk, there was still work to be done. He says the walk was more about putting himself in a place to work through his issues rather than to solve them. And so he found himself in Aspen at a seminar designed to help veterans where he learned how to meditate and express his feelings.
Hold, two, breathe in.
He also spent time with Father Thomas Keating at St. Benedict's Monastery in Snowmass.
We're discovering that antidepressants don't always reach the depths of this pain. It's the raw, primitive feeling. I did something terribly wrong, and I just don't know whether I was justified or whether I can be forgiven.
And as Voss learned to think clearly about his experiences and how to express himself, he was able to handle his post-traumatic stress better.
Meditation has helped me I can't even put it into words how much it's helped me.
Voss now works with Project Welcome Home Troops, the same group that helped him in Aspen. He acts as a liaison between veterans and the organization that helps provide mental health services to returning military personnel.
So these breathing techniques that they teach in these workshops really focus on releasing a lot of the stress that you have taken on over the years. So our body holds on to stress, and regardless of you know, how much exercise you do, sometimes the stress is your body still holds on to it.
Voss's journey from Wisconsin to Iraq, to his moral injuries and back to health, is all on screen in a way that might be as brave as fighting for your country. This week's guest for First Draft is literary critic John Freeman. He's reviewed and interviewed authors like Toni Morrison, Philip Roth, and David Foster Wallace. In this segment of First Draft, Freeman tells host Mitzi Rapkin about the interview itself and how it's a form of conversation rather than a conversation itself.
Well, I do find that when you sit down to talk to someone, a lot of your brain is sort of gauging their reaction to you, as well as suppressing anxieties that you have about presenting yourself. And as an interviewer, that component of interpersonal communication can be deadly because you're there to elicit more talk, more interesting stories from the novelist, from the poet, from whomever it is that you're interviewing. And it's very hard to shut that off. And a lot of times in conversation, we put out fishing lines to the other person for them to say, it's okay, you're okay. And in an interview, that really is not okay. You're not, even though you're co-creating the text of what the conversation is, the author is really just there to talk. And so in the course of doing these interviews over 13 years, I did discover that it was a very strange but quite effective form of therapy about thinking about how I perceive myself, because it basically meant that I had to stop thinking about my own perception and simply just listen. And in the end, for me at least, I don't know if this is the case for other journalists, it's made it easier for me to listen in situations because I can just shut down the part of my brain which is watching the conversation.
And so what do you get out of talking to writers?
So much. I mean, writers, first of all, are hugely entertaining. They're storytellers, they're professional liars, they're funny. They've often had intense and dramatic experiences. They've wrestled with a lot of the questions, I think, that remain submerged in our own lives, like whether you believe in God or not, because I think that's something you have to address as a storyteller, especially as a novelist, because as a novelist, you are a creator. You're a creator of a world that has to have the coherence and integrity of our own. And even though I'm secular, I do look at that act, that creation, as something holy. And for me, books are the things I turn to, not just for comfort and entertainment and pleasure, but for wisdom. And so to sit down with creators, the people whose worlds affected mine, who basically changed my brain, who live inside my brain, their characters feel like people I met, is spooky and strange and hugely electrifying. I mean, it's not like meeting a celebrity, which I write in the book, you know, where your eye is kind of readjusting to the physical contours of someone who's captured mostly on film. It's your whole brain getting wrapped around the fact that this person who's created a world that you lived in, that you inhabited, that stays with you with memories as if they're your own, especially if they're very, very good, is just a person in flesh and blood. And it is such a pleasure to talk to them because they can then sometimes not deceive you, but they are not what you expect in some cases. That the life that they live is very different from the life that they write about in their books. And it's that gap, the gap between the life lived and the one created by the books, which I'm most interested in, and I think is the subject of every profile. Not trying to bring them together and make them the same, but to explore the ways that they're different and why they're different.
You've worked for years as a book critic, and your work has appeared in almost 200 English language publications around the world. And I'm wondering, what makes a worthy book critic?
Generosity. I mean, I think it's true of that and of any reader. To be a reader, you have to be willing to say yes, to take the leap of faith, to suspend your disbelief and to put yourself in the hands of another, and usually, if it's a good book, in the life of another. And to be a critic is to triple that sort of equation. So you're not just giving in to the book, you're not just giving in to the characters, you're giving in to the whole project of the writer, of trying to understand what they're setting out to do. As a reader, you don't necessarily have to take that on. You can simply be transported. But as a critic, because you're looking at the construction of a book and whether it achieves its aims, whether its design is sound, you have to look very seriously and very carefully at what the writer is trying to do. And the writer will give you clues, and usually it's self-evident if you read closely. But many critics, I think, review as if they could go back and redesign the whole scope of a book. Or they criticize a book based on something it's not trying to be, or they wish it would be something else. And so I think to be a critic, you have to be generous, because you have that extra layer of responsibility of getting deep inside what a writer is attempting to do.
What makes a book worthy of an award?
Beauty and importance, and the feeling that the writer has achieved something that makes it excellent. And achievement in the arts is so hard to quantify. It's not like Usain Bolt, where you think, is he going to break 9.5 seconds in the 100 meters? With a book, it could be in the same area, the same topic area. It could be in the same vein and style of other books which have come before it. But there is, in aesthetics, you look for intensity and coherence and beauty and innovation. And it's, there's no way to graph that out. But with really good books, you know.
That was John Freeman speaking with First Draft host Mitzi Rapkin. You can hear their entire conversation online at aspenpublicradio.org. This weekend is the final one for Shakespeare in the Park, an annual festival put on by the Hudson Reed Ensemble. I spoke with Kent Reed of the group about what it takes to put on a festival outside. As You Like It is one of Shakespeare's more fantastical plays, along with A Midsummer Night's Dream. But rather than the magical elements of the latter, As You Like It is described as a pastoral comedy. Kent Reed was tasked with bringing the play outdoors to Galena Plaza for Shakespeare in the Park, an event in its 10th year.
You know, Shakespeare writes on a pretty large palette. And although, yeah, there's indoors and outdoors, but even the Globe Theater didn't really have a roof. So it was kind of semi inside, outside.
Reed had to take the story of Rosalind as she flees her uncle's court and eventually finds love and put it outside. And when your source material coined the term, all the world's a stage, you kind of have to take it literally.
Still, the scope and breadth of his plays just lend itself, especially to a beautiful landscape, which I think we've created in the Greena Plaza.
I feel like almost like at this point with Shakespeare, like, it's been done so many times, like the original way, that you like it's like just better to do it your own way.
Well, you know, it's a conundrum in a way. If we in this valley had, you know, Shakespearean trained actors who were very familiar with the literature and the language, that would be one thing. But we don't. What we have are a very talented group of people who many of them are getting their first introduction to Shakespeare. Not that they're not bad actors. They're very good actors. But this is the first time with Shakespeare.
So he had to make some changes. First, whittle down the script by about an hour. Then put his own personal flair in by adding music and putting different spins on some of the characters, making them dress like goths, for example.
We just want to make it more palatable to everybody.
And although As You Like It is also the first use of the phrase too much of a good thing, that doesn't seem to be the case for Shakespeare in the Park. Good afternoon. For this week's Song of the Week, we've picked Andy, You're a Star by The Killers. They play this weekend at the Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day Experience.
Yeah.
It's Monday, August 29th, and this is The Week in the Arts, an abbreviated list of the upcoming events and happenings in the Valley. Clay National 11 closes at the R2 Gallery in Carbondale on Monday. As fall returns, go on a ghost tour of Aspen on Tuesday night. The Sunset Sound series continues in Glenwood Springs that same night as well. Wednesday night is foreign film night at the Basalt Public Library. The great Japanese film Nobody Knows is being screened. It's the closing weekend of Shakespeare in the Park from the Hudson Reed Ensemble. The Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day experience begins on Friday. Train and Andy Grammer play Friday. The Killers and Thievery Corporation play on Saturday. Stevie Wonder, Duran Duran, and Corinne Bailey Ray play on Sunday. And First Friday is this week in Carbondale. For more on arts and culture in the Valley, go online to aspenpublicradio.org. This is Curated, a weekly show dedicated to arts and culture. I'm Patrick Fort at the Ed Lisnison Arts and Culture Desk. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.